Committee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're here today for a public hearing and work session on House Bill 5001, which is the Department of Agriculture fee bill. And to start out, I will turn this over to Mr. Rocco from the Legislative Fiscal Office to talk to us about the fee ratification process.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought we should provide a little bit of background on why two bills are going to be before you, one today and one tomorrow, dealing with fee establishments and increases. I provide you with a memo that has some background that's attached to the agenda for today. Primarily, the reason is that agencies can set fees in three ways. A fee can be established in statute as an exact amount. It's the maximum and the minimum, and that fee is established, and the agency collects the fee. The legislature can also provide authority in law to an agency to set other kinds of fees, and it may have a cap to it. So as long as the agency is under that cap, it can adjust the fee without direct legislative approval. It's just a cap amount. And then there's another way that an agency can set fees through rules, administrative rules, and this is when the legislature approves an agency's budget. The budget is dependent on fees, and that allows the agency to set a fee by rule in order to cover those budgetary expenses. In 1995, the legislature passed a bill. It was Senate Bill 333, and this bill was designed to provide some legislative oversight on fee increases so that an agency dealing with the latter two of those examples that I gave you would have to come back to the legislature for ratification. The legislature felt that even though there was a rulemaking process that agencies could go through, they wanted to see what the effect of those of that rulemaking process was on individual fees. And this process is in ORS 291.050. Under this law, any fee increase that an agency adopts after July 1st of an odd number year, basically when after the legislature goes out of session, these fees are not effective until they're approved in writing by the director of the Department of Administrative Services for the executive branch agencies. When they're increased, they have to be reported to the director of DAS within 10 days of their adoption. And finally, they're rescinded as of July 1st of the next odd-numbered year, unless they are approved by the legislature. And that's what these two bills that you'll be dealing with today and tomorrow are doing. It's your approval, sort of retroactively, of fee increases that were fee increases that were adopted during the last interim. And on the second page of that memo is just an example of this kind of a process.
Questions?
I'm ready.
You ready?
Ready.
Representative Nolan.
Just a clarification, Madam Chair. We aren't actually asked to retroactively approve the fee. We're asked to approve its continuance. If we don't approve it, it doesn't create the obligation for a refund of fees already collected. It just means that starting July 1, they go back to the old level.
That's correct, Representative, yes. The amount of the
not
fee
that
would,
I'm proposing that, but
right,
I just want to
understand.
Understand.
But the amount of the fee would roll back to what it was before that it was
right.
Increased. That's correct, yes.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much. Now we have our new committee staff. to present us with the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 4 and page 5 of your packet, you will see House Bill 5001, which is the Department of Agriculture fee bill. It shows the proposed fee increases for ratification, and there are a few amendments also to the bill that have been written in that you will note as well. And there are a number of these. There's about 26, and some of them are different amounts and different units. The department has a presentation to talk about some of the methodology that determined why those fees were increased, and their presentation material is on page 7. The detail of each of these fees in the bill is on page 8. Page 8 gives you the fee that's to be ratified, but it also shows you some history of what the fee used to be and when the changes were made to that fee. For example, if you're on page 8 and look at number 1, the wholesale seed dealers, the fee that is to be ratified is $400 annually. That was a change that they made June 6th of 2000. It used to be $260. The last time the fee was, the previous time the fee was increased was in 1993. And before that, it was 1991. It also shows the revenue expected for the current biennium and the amount that the increase in the fee generated. So there's a lot of data on page 8. The department has summarized that into something a little more easy to understand on page 7, and they'll be going through just a little bit higher summary than the full detail, but the detail is there. I'd like to turn to page 6 in your packet just to show you the fiscal impact of all these fees together. The effect on revenues of the proposed House bill plus the amendments totals $1,293,294 in other funds. And that total is reached by increases in several different categories, which are listed in the comments section towards the bottom, the largest section being the pesticide product registration fees and the shipping point inspection services. In all these cases, the fees are being raised to cover costs of these various programs, but there is one exception to that. The cost recovery on the pesticide product registration fee, the fee contains an additional $10 mandated by House Bill 3602 from last session. There's a $10 fee which generates an estimated $96,990 per calendar year, and that's dedicated for the pesticide reporting system. And so for the biennium, that's roughly $184,000. For that system, and that's not just going towards program costs. That's a little bit extra, but there was a reason for that. Again, there are several different individual fees, and over time, with inflation and with other demands on programs, costs go up, but revenues are at a fixed level by rule unless they are changed. And the department has been drawing down balances that carry over because these are other funds. And this bill is an attempt to help adjust some of those so that those programs can continue at current levels. Without those, there would have to be adjustments in things that are being done. We have these fees already assumed in the budgets that were reviewed in our public hearing. And again, if there were substantial changes, that may require us to go back and revisit what we can do in the budget. We would have to look at that.
Senator Dukes?
I just have a, I'm not sure I can read this chart question.
Okay.
Exotic animal permits.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to charge $300 for a new permit, and we're presently charging 20. Is that accurate?
That is correct, and there's some reasons for those increases that I think
sure
the department wants
and
to
get a chance to do that.
I just speak to.
I just thought maybe there was a lot of information in that little section, and I thought maybe I wasn't reading that.
Right, probably. And you'll be able
also
to
also learn that I can own a bear. I didn't know that.
Okay,
so I'm going to have to get a $300 permit.
The real thing, Senator, you got to feed the thing.
Yeah.
That's the big problem.
That's like that free horse, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, just don't lose it because you won't be able to find it with hounds.
The neighbors will shoot it, so don't worry about it.
So, unless there are further questions, maybe we could have the department come up and explain some of the rationale that got us to these fee increases.
Further questions or comments for Mr. Fletcher? If we could have the department come forward, we have Chuck Craig, Deputy Director, and Lisa Hansen, the Assistant Director from the Department of Ag. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig, the Deputy Director for Department of Ag, and with me is Lisa Hansen, our Assistant Director. Madam Chair, I just wanted to say that Director Phil Ward is on his way back from the U.S. Food Export Show, probably driving back from Portland right now, or he would be here, and he's also had the good fortune during this trip of being able to talk to Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman about our concerns about the Klamath situation, so I'm kind of anxious to hear how that went. But anyway, Madam Chair, as has been discussed, we prepared a higher level table summary of our fee increases, hoping it would be a little bit easier to understand. So what I would propose to do is to talk about these seven major areas of fee increase that you can see along the left-hand side, and then there are a number of pieces of information going along on the right, including what the fee is, the authority, who pays it, when the last increase occurred, the process, and we can even go into some detail there on what the reaction of the constituency was to the fee increase, if you would like. And again, I would reiterate that most of these fees are the result of an increase in the cost of doing business, that and the fee has not been increased for a number of years. There are.
I would just encourage the members of the committee to ask questions as they arise.
And there are a couple of cases where the legislature actually changed the fee structure, including the exotic animal fees, which we'd be happy to talk about for Senator Dukes.
You thought you were going to get your bear license cheap, didn't you?
Well, if we take action on this.
You can talk to me.
I'm sorry.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, most of these fees, at least the larger part of them, were in the program areas that Lisa was the administrator of the Commodity Inspection Division when the fee actually was increased. And so I'm going to ask her to go through the first several of these for the committee.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Madam Chair, before she gets started,
yes,
I have a question you won't laugh at. With each of these licenses, is there inspection involved? Or if there's not, could you mention it as you go? I mean, I'm noticing tags in here. They're going from 20 cents, from 15 cents a tag to 20. It didn't occur to me that we were actually inspecting the tags. So I'm assuming that there's a person who's out somewhere in the field who's inspecting. And if that assumption isn't correct, would you point it out? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will be glad to point out what type of work goes along with each of the fees and how that's associated. I'm going to start out with the retail seed licensing fee. It increased $10. The authority for this fee is in ORS 633-700. There are about 800 retail seed licenses in Oregon. The last time the fee was increased was in 1993. This license is required of anyone who sells seed retail. It would be a Rite Aid, a local co-op if they weren't licensed as a wholesale seed dealer. And that is also goes through the administrative rule process. The seed increases in fees, we worked with the constituency, the Oregon Seed Trade Association, as well as the Oregon Seed Council and the Oregon Ag Fiber Association to work through this process. The Oregon Seed Council and the Oregon Seed Trade Association both supported this, the fee increases, and made recommendations for us to move forward on them as well, as did the Ag Fiber Association.
Could I ask a question, please?
Representative Lowe.
Are these permits site-specific or per corporation? For example, there are probably about a bazillion Fred Meyer stores that sell seed. Does each one have to have a permit?
Madam Chairman, Representative Lowe, for the retail seed licenses, each one of them is required to have a license. So the Rite Aid in Woodburn, the Rite Aid in Silverton, the Rite Aid in Silverton, all of them would have to have the $40 license.
Does this also include those racks of seeds that are in convenience stores and little corner grocery stores? Do they have to be licensed too?
Madam Chair, that is correct. If you offer seed for sale in Oregon and you are not the producer of that seed, you are required to be licensed.
Senator Dukes.
And what do I, the consumer, get out of them paying this $40 fee?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, in the early 90s, the seed industry came to the department and wanted to put a program in place to ensure a fair playing field in terms of marketing in the grass seed industry specifically. This ensures that the product that is labeled, it's labeled correctly. It has sell-by dates, and those are correct in terms of consumer protection as well as providing regulatory supervision over the licensed wholesale seed dealers to ensure they are maintaining proper records of their seed dealings.
Couldn't you get all of that at the wholesale end? Couldn't you go into wherever these things are being packaged and discover that those pole beans are actually bush beans and they're mislabeling them?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the retail seed program actually goes into the retailers and pulls seed and looks at them for germination. They have to maintain a current germination date. They're allowed 18 months from the date of packaging, and then that expires. They need to be updated if they're past the 18-month time that they were packed within.
If somebody pays $40 for the little local 7-Eleven, what are their chances that one of your inspectors is ever going to get in there and look at their seeds?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, in the spring when the seed typically goes out, we have districts around the state and we have people from those areas go out and pull samples. It's a random sampling.
Wait a minute, what percentage of the businesses that sell seeds do you get to, or the stores? What are chances that my store is going to have an inspector come in and make sure those are bean seeds in my bean packets?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I would have to get back to you with those numbers if you would like me to do that.
Sure. I'm curious if they're paying for anything.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I think there's also an issue here of a fair amount of the seeds sold in Oregon may not have been packaged in Oregon. And if we can't inspect and license at the point of sale, what are we going to do if it came from Ohio or someplace like that?
I just rarely see seed that isn't packaged by some major seed company
And if they're putting asparagus seeds in their bean packets, somebody's going to notice, and they're going to shift to a, the consumer's going to shift to another seed company to buy their seeds. And if none of their seeds sprout, the same thing's going to happen. So I was just, I mean, if you're going into them all the time, once a year or whatever, or once every other year, then that seems legitimate, I guess. It just seems like if you own a store today, you get dinged for a permit for every single thing that comes through your door. And I was surprised to discover that included the seed rack.
Well, let's go on to talk about wholesale seed dealers.
The wholesale seed dealers program, the fees increase from $260 to $400 annually, which is the cap that has been set in statute. The authority for that is in ORS 633-700. There are 221 licensed wholesale seed dealers with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We use the same process of working with the industry to increase this fee. Also, the other piece of information that I would share with you, the wholesale program, we have the ability to levy civil penalties. And that was brought forth by the industry in the early 90s when they wanted to regulate the industry more closely. This program lived off of some of the funds from the civil penalty, and that allowed us to go from 93 until 2000 without raising the fees. The seed sampling and inspection program for seed, hay, and straw. This is a voluntary program. These are official samples used for regulatory and phytosanitary issuance. The fees increased from $21 per hour to $26 per hour. And for seed, each additional lot increased $1 per lot. The authority is in ORS 632 and ORS 633. The people that pay this are seed dealers, seed producers, hay and straw exporters. This fee was in place since 1990. And again, we worked with the Oregon Seed Council, the Oregon Seed Trade Association, and the Oregon Ag Fiber Association to increase this fee. The seed tags that we issue increased 5 cents per tag. The seed dealers and the seed producers are levied this fee. The fee was in place since 1990, and again, we worked with the industry on that. These two programs are basically marketing programs that were put into place by the industry with the department. The Oregon Sod Quality Program sets a higher standard in terms of germination, certification, and quality to be issued a sod quality tag. So they have to meet certain minimums, and then we'll issue an additional tag that goes on the seed, and it adds market value. The same is true of the Indifite tags, and so there are just two programs that this affects. The shipping...
Indifite?
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, Indifite is...
Indifite is a fungus that's intentionally introduced into seed crops because it provides resistance to diseases of turf grasses, and it provides a turf grass that's hardier and more vigorous in the area that it's grown in. But endophytes can be toxic to cattle when straw from those crops is fed, so that's why the concern exists about whether straw is endophyte-free or not.
Well, I'm glad I asked the question because I assumed that the endophyte tags were for mushroom growers. And I didn't know. So.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the endophyte tags are specifically for grass seed, as are the sod quality tags.
May I ask a follow-up? Is this the same genus that provides the wheat rust that causes China to not want to import our wheat?
I don't think so, but I really...
Basically a grass.
I'm not an expert on the different species of or families of fungus, but I don't believe it is.
I'm asking questions about spores, molds, and fungus. Never mind.
You're doing fine.
The shipping point inspection program, the fees were increased from $25 an hour to $28 an hour for regular users, from $30 an hour to $35 an hour for intermittent users, and you may want to mark that correction on the sheet. And the overtime rate was increased from $8 to $10 per hour, and the bulk inspection fees were increased 12%. The authority for the shipping point inspection program is ORS 632-940 and 945. Produce shippers, producers, and food processors pay this fee. The last time the fee was increased was in 1996. The shipping point inspection program has a standing committee that is known as the Shipping Point Advisory Committee that advises the department on the services provided by the shipping point inspection program, as well as assisting us with having an understanding of the dynamics that are currently going on in the industry. The Shipping Point Advisory Committee recommended that we increase the fees to maintain the level of service that is currently provided to them. The pesticide product registration fee increased from an average of $87 to $130 per product. The authority for the this is 634-060-5. Pesticide manufacturers pay this fee. There are approximately 9,699 pesticide products registered in Oregon. In addition, $10 of this fee was used to fund the pesticide use reporting system and the analytical review.
Okay, moving down to the exotic animal permits, and these fees are for a two-year period. In Oregon, exotic animals are non-indigenous cats, canines, bears, and what else? And non-human primates, and that excludes, the definition excludes domestic cats and dogs. So if you want to own a tiger, for example, in Oregon as a pet, not for a commercial purpose such as exhibition or breeding, you need to obtain an exotic animal permit from the Department of Agriculture. This law goes back to 1985. And it was substantially revised in the last session of the legislature because we found that the law was oriented almost completely toward making sure that the cage that the animal was kept in was secure. And there was very little that we could do in a lot of ways to deal with other issues that had to do with the safety of the public or issues that had to do with the welfare of the animals themselves. So there was a case that became pretty well known in the media that you may have seen where a person obtained a Siberian tiger, moved it into a residential neighborhood in Portland, and one of the people that lived next to this just absolutely refused to accept it. We ended up having to describe to the Portland City Council why that we really couldn't do much about it, that this person had followed the existing laws, that the confinement facility that they had was acceptable under the law, and we had to go to great lengths to revoke the permit and get the animal out of where it shouldn't have been. So in the last session of the legislature, there was a major revision of the exotic animal statutes that took place, and we had a working group of everyone from the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association and the Humane Society to all of the known groups of exotic animal owners and dealers and so on in Oregon participate in developing a consensus on this. And the laws were strengthened considerably. The requirements were strengthened, and the work that we have to do to permit the animals was increased very substantially, so that now if you want to have an exotic animal, you have to submit an application for review prior to possessing the animal. And previously, you could bring the animal in and then apply for the permit. And that was a major problem because we'd have people that had spent tens of thousands of dollars on these animals that would have them in the state. And then we come out and say, you know, this cage is not good enough, or you have to do this, this, and this, and we're kind of stuck with a bad situation. Well, now they have to apply ahead of time, and we have to review the application and inspect the facility prior to it being occupied by the animal and prior to issuing the permit, and also conduct a review of the qualifications and an interview with a veterinarian of the person applying for the permit to make sure that they understand the requirements for the care and nutrition of some of these animals. And then we, after we do that, we also have to inspect these facilities once a year. So that, and our costs are $32 an hour for the veterinarian's time, plus 32 and a half cents a mile for the travel time. And we had, originally it was proposed to have a $600 cap on the fee, which is fairly consistent with what the federal fees are for the federal facilities as well. And we compromised and figured out ways that we could reduce the cost down to a $300 cap and then have a sliding scale for a much lesser fee for the smaller animals that don't pose nearly the risk to the public as, say, the large predatory cats or bears or so on. So what you'll see is that it's the $300 biennial fee applies to things like bears and tigers and lions and so forth. And by and large, the largest category of exotic animals that are out there, of which we know of 55 owners right now, are the smaller exotic cats and smaller animals that are really of less concern from a public safety standpoint. And so the fee did go up in some cases for the larger animals, but most of the existing owners were grandfathered in, only having to renew their existing permit. So their fee went from $20 every 2 years to $25 every 2 years, and that's probably 80% of the exotic animal owners out there.
Questions, please.
Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supposing you have more than one exotic animal, like multiple primates or something like that, do you have to pay the fee for each animal?
Not if they're the same class, you only need one permit.
So, and do you charge this this fee for quasi-state or state agencies that keep primates? Keep animals, you do not charge.
This fee, Madam Chair,
inspections,
right?
Say the Primate Center.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, this program applies to exotic animals that are kept by private individuals as pets. Zoos and rehab facilities and research facilities generally have federal permits and are permitted.
They're exempt from the state.
Right. They're exempt from the state law. But they have a different kind of license and pay fees to the federal government.
So the 55, is that the number of permits that are currently issued?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Just out of curiosity, if, say, I lived in Representative Nolan's district and wanted to keep a cougar, would I need to be involved in this program? I could just go get a cougar? And
you would have to deal with the Department of Fish and Wildlife on that. A cougar is an indigenous animal and not classified as an exotic.
And permit. Multnomah County changed their local ordinance on those types of critters, too. After the tiger in Southwest Portland.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Local governments have the authority to adopt bans on exotic animals in addition to whatever the state law is. A city or county can just say, this is not going to be allowed here.
Further questions? Senator Dukes.
This doesn't get into reptiles and that sort of thing, does it?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, it does not.
So those fees are not being changed, is that?
Things like snakes and lizards and things like that are not regulated under the exotic animal law. They may be covered under what are called the wildlife integrity rules of Department of Fish and Wildlife. They have a program and a set of rules that are designed to deal with species that, if they were introduced in Oregon, could pose a hazard to native Oregon wildlife. And so they have some regulations on what is allowed to be imported. But these particular animals do not include reptiles.
Okay, what about some of the smaller critters? This is not a facetious question. Flying squirrels, I understood, were exotic animals.
Not.
Gosh, don't say that too loud. My son's probably listening upstairs.
I told
him he couldn't have one because they were exotic animals and had to have a permit.
I don't believe that's the case.
Flying squirrels clearly are not indigenous to Oregon. At least I don't think they are.
Yeah, they are.
They are? Okay. And I learned recently that you weren't allowed to own a ferret in California. But maybe they're indigenous too. I didn't think they were. They're cute little critters, but they're not exotic in Oregon. So
no, they're not classified as an exotic animal, but as I said, they could be covered under Department of Fish and Wildlife's wildlife integrity rules. If a particular species of animal that is not indigenous were to be introduced in Oregon and posed a problem for native Oregon wildlife, and they had a concern, they may restrict the importation of those animals.
Further questions? Representative
Hansen. Not a question, but a comment. When we passed the Multnomah County Ordinance, we extended it quite a ways to include a lot of other animals like pythons and rattlesnakes. You get some very interesting people at the public hearings.
Yeah, 55 Oregonians on lions and tigers and bears.
You get a lot of interesting people at the public hearings.
I'm sorry, it took me a second.
Further questions? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you may have covered this while I was out of the room, but the pesticide product registration, that's $10 currently. That goes up to, is it $40 after a certain period of time here? I see Terry nodding his head in the back.
Madam Chair, Representative Kraft. The fee can be increased to $160 maximum.
Did you get your question answered?
Yeah, Madam Chair, currently it's at the $10 level. Does it automatically escalate in the legislation from last session?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, we would have to go through the rulemaking process.
To do that, okay. Right. Thank you.
Further questions? Does that conclude your presentation? Then what I will do is end the public hearing and we'll go to work session on this bill. And Mr. Fletcher, could you please give us OFO's recommendation?
Yes, on page 9 of your packet, which is the last page, the recommendation is summarized. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends the adoption of the amendments to House Bill 5001 as proposed on pages 4 and 5. And we also recommend the approval of the other proposed fee adjustments. The continuation of these fees will enable the department to monitor inspection, sampling, registration, and other programs at current levels. If we do adjust these fees and the revenue is adjusted, we may have to revisit budgets and make according adjustments there. So in a way, it's good we're addressing revenue before we finally go to work session on the budget, but the recommendation is to approve the ratification of these fees that have already been increased.
Representative Nola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm supportive of both the amendment and the underlying bill. I just want to remind us, as Mr. Fletcher has indirectly reminded us, that we still have work to do on the department's budget. And in particular, I'm supportive of ratifying the increased fee for pesticide product registration, but we particularly left that piece of the department's budget, the pesticide use reporting system, as an unfinished piece of business that we need to work before we conclude the department's budget.
And that is an excellent point, Representative Nolan, and we are still working very closely with the department to get the numbers nailed down on that.
Great. Thank you.
The chair will accept a motion to accept the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendations for adoption of the amendments to House Bill 50,001. Does that do this?
5,001.
Excuse me.
Yeah. You've been chair for a while, and zeros can come easier, don't they?
5,000, 50,000.
Oh, dear. So I'm so glad there's not that many bills, too.
You guys have been busy in the House.
Okay, we do have a motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative Krupp.
Madam Chair, I concur with Representative Nola. I'm pleased to see that we're moving ahead on the pesticide use reporting system. I think that's critical. We made a commitment last session to do that, and I am pleased, and I know that you're working diligently to get a handle on that issue with the department, and I'm very pleased about that. I brought down this, Madam Chair. This is last week's Capitol Press, and the front page says it all. I can't vote for the fee increases, and I'll tell you why. I can't look these people in the face who are losing their farms and ask them for more money. I can ask myself to pay a little more, but I just can't do that for those folks. And I know this is a fee-driven system, and that we have to, some of these fees need to be updated, and I understand that, but I just can't do that. Sorry.
I have great respect for your position, Representative Krupp, and being a member of the industry yourself, I recognize that this cuts real close to home, and I respect the position that you're taking. Is there anyone else that wishes to comment on it? Is there anyone else that objects to the motion with Representative Krupp's nay vote being recorded as such? Without further objection, then the motion passes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. Representative Nolan, I very much appreciate your prompting me. I neglected to serve notice of potential conflict of interest, as I am a grass seed farmer, and many of these fees apply to me.
So noted. Thank you.
Madam Chair. I'm a Christmas tree grower. I pay fees to the Department of Agriculture, and I serve notice of possible conflict of interest, having voted in the affirmative.
So noted. Thank you.
Madam Chair. I buy seeds from those little racks.
I do too.
We have.
I want to have a ferret.
Just kidding.
You don't have to pay for them.
If I could have a snow cat, I would.
We have no further business before the committee today. Oh, we better have some carriers. We have to take this to full. Senator, for some strange reason, I have been neglecting to saddle you with bills in the full committee. And so
you decided today was the day to start?
Madam Chair.
Sure.
thought we voted on the amendment. Have we voted on the bill?
House Bill 5001 was the motion.
I think the motion was the amendment. I think you're correct. And we need to vote on the bill as amended.
I think we just voted on the amendment.
Madam Chair?
I'm so glad you're in this committee.
To the Full Ways and Means Committee as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Are there objections to the motion?
So noted.
So noted. Representative Krupp votes no. Are there any further objections?
If there was anyone who wished to serve notice of a potential conflict of interest before voting, that would be the time to do that.
Madam Chair, let it so be noted. Thank you, Senator Ferriero.
Madam Chair,
let it be noted that Representative Hansen and Representative Krupp have...
And Representative Hayden.
Hayden.
Oh, Hayden.
You mean if you buy a seed, you've got to declare a conflict of interest?
What if you buy it and never get around to planting it?
Representative Krupp has made a notice of a conflict of interest, but Senator Dukes and I were discussing the issue, and he is a member of a class. However, my position would be he is a member with no class, so obviously does have to make that conflict.
I resemble everyone.
On the table. And hearing no further objections to the motion, I will, the motion passes.
Senator Dukes would be glad to carry it forward.
Now, I have to erase that from my pencil.
Oh, are you throwing things at me now?
We will give the motion the bill to Senator Dukes to carry in full.
I'll carry it for you.
Are you volunteering?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you very much, Representative Nolan. I appreciate that. Okay. And would you also carry it on the Senate floor?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Tomorrow we will be doing a fee bill for the Department of Environmental Quality. And the sooner that everyone gets here, the sooner we can get it done. I believe that there are no further announcements. Mr. Rocco, do you have any announcements for the committee?
No.
Having no further business, the meeting is adjourned.